Attention. This podcast contains subject matter that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. From out of the darkness, you hear voices that send shivers down your spine. That feeling of dread is undeniable. When you notice the monster under the bed is trembling. The aliens are scrambling to get back to the mothership, and the vampires are refusing to rise. Your reptilian overlords are pleased to force on you two humans they swear are not their captives. Your hosts, Michael and Wendy. This is Eerie and Absurd.
Welcome back to Eerie and Absurd. I'm Mike.
I'm Wendy.
What a week. Mm-hmm. Been frozen in the house, surviving off of Dr. Peppers.
No, we haven't had that many Dr. Peppers.
Yeah, there's like a Dr. Pepper shortage.
There's not.
Nobody has any.
It's because everybody went shopping before the storm, except for us.
Mm-hmm. We've got ramen noodles and Dr. Pepper. What else do we need?
But we didn't have that many Dr. Peppers to stop.
Yeah.
You're acting like we have a bunch.
You've been stingy with them. I had to suffer and drink sweet tea.
That sounds terrible. Or water.
Ugh. Did you get out and play in the snow?
No.
Me either.
I don't like doing that. Well, it's been like in the teens. I know. Other people are probably laughing, but I do not like being cold. And then we live on a hill, so it seems like it's even colder because the wind is always blowing. And in the summer, it's hot. It's a hot wind.
The kids love the hill, though. They were sledding.
Yeah, they were sledding, so they liked it.
I just yelled, close the door, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Because they kept having to come in.
Every 30 seconds.
Because they were cold. We tried to have them shovel the driveway.
That was hilarious.
Yes. So there's snow on top of about an inch or so of ice.
At least.
Because it rained and stuff first. And then it froze. And then the snow came in. And things tried to melt. And then it froze again. And then we had snow again. And by the time they got out there to shovel the driveway, everything was so compacted and like just packed together that they were making no progress. So the square that they did make progress on is the only thing that's defrosted.
Yeah, and I had to go out there because they weren't even in the driveway. They were just digging in the yard. What are you doing? It's over there.
They couldn't tell. Yeah, so that's been interesting. I'm ready for everybody to go back to school and work.
You know what else is interesting?
What's that?
A man builds a guitar out of the skeleton of his dead uncle.
What? Ew. Why would he even do that?
To play black metal.
Now, was his uncle like...
He liked black metal also. Okay. He got him into black metal. The guy's name is Prince Midnight. He's a YouTuber.
Oh, okay.
And he said that when he passed away, his uncle passed away in the 90s in Greece. Originally, he had donated his skeleton to the local college, and it was medically prepared for the school. After 20 years, it ended up in a cemetery that the family was paying rent on. And over in Greece, because of their religion, they don't generally cremate bodies.
Okay.
And so he finally just had it sent to him, and yeah, he built a guitar out of it.
Wow.
I guess the uncle's name was Philip, so he's calling it the Philip Skelecaster. And there's a video on YouTube you can watch where he's actually playing it. Man, it looks awesome, but it's
dude, that's
weird.
Yeah,
it's
super weird. Well, I'm not going to lie. Like, you cannot do that in America. You cannot say, just ship me the skeleton so I don't pay rent. Well, you actually buy the plots, though, here. So you're not renting a space for your loved one.
He's an American YouTuber.
Okay.
So he's in America.
What?
He had it shipped to him.
How is that even possible? I didn't even think you could do that. Wow. I feel like some wall got broken, maybe.
The article I'm looking at is guitarworld.com. Man builds guitar out of his dead uncle's skeleton.
Okay.
If you guys, we can link it.
Yeah, I've got lots of questions about this.
There's a video of the uncle playing this particular black metal song on YouTube also. And then there's the video of the nephew playing that same song on the uncle's skeleton guitar.
I mean, I guess that's metal, man.
Yeah, so we got some good stories.
Well, you're going to talk about dancing today, right?
I'm going to, yes.
Your love of dancing.
Dying to dance. Not me, these people.
All right, well then tell me about the...
The Dancing Plague of 1518. Now, had you heard about this before I mentioned it?
I had heard about it, but I didn't know, like, I didn't look too deep into it. I assumed everybody ate rotten bread and they just kind of lost their shit.
Yeah, that No.
Or it was like a mass hysteria situation. You know, one person does it, and then this person's like, oh, I don't want them to be doing that by themselves. And then everybody thinks it's cool, and so they all just start doing it. I didn't know.
This isn't the only occasion, the 1518. It happened several times previous to this. This is just the most documented. The earliest known outbreak of dancing plague occurred during the 7th century, and it reappeared sometime during the 1020s in Bernburg, Germany. Additional outbreaks occurred during the 13th century, and in one instance, in 1237, a group of children jumped and danced continuously while traveling between the towns of Erfurt and Arnstadt, Germany, a distance of 12 miles. In 1278, 200 people began dancing on a bridge over the River Meuse in Germany, causing the bridge to collapse. Between 1373 and 1374, outbreaks of the dancing plague were reported in England, Germany, and the Netherlands. The most famous and best documented was in July of 1518 when residents of the city of Strasbourg were struck by a sudden and seemingly uncontrollable urge to dance. The odd event started when a woman known as Frau Trofea, and Frau stands for Mrs., so they don't even know what her first name actually was.
Oh.
Frau Trofea stepped into the cobbled streets near her home and began to silently dance. There wasn't any music playing as far as we know, and despite her husband's pleas to stop, she continued dancing for hours until she finally collapsed from exhaustion. The next morning, she was up and at it again. She continued to dance, and by the third day, a crowd had gathered to watch the spectacle unfold. She kept dancing day and night, and eventually, others started to dance with her. By the fourth day, 33 other dancers had joined in. So people are just starting to dance. And there's no music or anything. They're just dancing.
They're just dancing.
In the street, yeah. Frightened authorities intervened by sending Trofea in a wagon 30 miles away to Severn, hoping she would be cured at the Shrine of Vitus, the saint who was believed to have cursed her. So Saint Vitus was a Christian saint who was persecuted by Roman emperors and died as a martyr in 303 AD. It also led to Vitus being considered the patron saint of dancers and entertainers in general. In Germany, his feast was celebrated with dancing before his statue. He is also said to protect against lightning strikes, animal attacks, and oversleeping. His feast day is celebrated on June 15th, in case you want to celebrate it.
There's a saint for everything.
Seems like it, yeah. However, even after Trofea was removed, those who had witnessed her strange performance had continued to dance, with more and more people joining in as they came to see the mysterious dancing. With no other explanation for the phenomenon, local physicians blamed it on hot blood.
Sounds like a southern thing.
Hot, we got the hot blood. And their solution was to simply dance the fever away. That was it. More dancing. The cure for dancing fever, they recommended, more dancing.
That don't make sense, but okay.
A 16th century chronicle composed by the architect Daniel Specklin records what the city council did next. Carpenters and tanners were ordered to transfer their guild halls into temporary dance floors and set up platforms in the horse market and in the grain market in full view of the public. That seems like a bad idea. People are seeing others dance and they're starting to join in.
Right.
You think you would do it in private.
I'm sure, like, the town is probably little, so they already know things are happening. I'm surprised they didn't accuse them of witchcraft if it's mainly women, but I guess because no men were dancing, really?
Most men don't dance.
Unless they're awesome.
Mm-hmm. To make them recover faster, dozens of musicians were paid to play drums, fiddles, pipes, and horns, with healthy dancers being brought in for further encouragement. The authorities hoped to create the optimal conditions for the dance to exhaust itself, but it backfired and more dancers joined in. Many dancers collapsed from sheer exhaustion. Some even died from strokes and heart attacks. Historical documents, including notes by the Strasbourg City Council, physicians' notes, religious sermons, and local and regional chronicles, showed that by August 1518, many of the dancers had died. Another explanation for what was happening was called choreomania, also known as the dancing plague, a term coined by a chemist and physician, Paracelsus, and the condition was initially considered a curse sent by a saint, usually Saint Vitus, and was therefore known as Saint Vitus's dance. Victims of the dancing mania often entered their processions at a place dedicated to the saint, who was prayed to in an effort to end the dancing. The council ordered those worse afflicted to be bundled into wagons and taken on a 3-day ride to the shrine of Saint Vitus, where Frau Trofea had been cured. I don't know why they didn't just do that in the first place. Priests placed the choreomaniacs underneath a wooden carving of Vitus. They put small crosses in their hands and red shoes on their feet. On the soles and tops of the shoes, they sprinkled holy water and painted crosses of consecrated oil. The ritual carried out in an atmosphere thick with incense and Latin incantations had the desired effects. So it was working. Word soon reached Strasbourg, and more were sent to Severn to be forgiven by Vitus. Within a week or so, the stream of suffering pilgrims had diminished to a trickle. The dancing plague had lasted for over a month, from mid-July to late August or early September. At its height, as many as 15 people were dying each day, just from exhaustion. They weren't eating or drinking. They were having to force them to drink something. Mm-hmm. They just wouldn't stop dancing. The final toll is unknown, but if such a daily death rate was true, it could have been into the hundreds of people dying. Several modern historians have argued that the dancing plagues were caused by ergot, a mind-altering mold found on the stalks of damp rye, which can cause twitching, jerking, and hallucinations, a condition known as St. Anthony's Fire. The disease's common name is derived from the medieval Benedictine monks dedicated to that saint who had offered treatment to sufferers. The fire element is referring to the burning sensation sufferers of the disease often feel in the extremities of the body. So St. Anthony's Fire is less well known than the Black Death Plague, but was constantly present throughout the Middle Ages. This happened a lot.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard of it.
Historian John Waller has debunked the ergot hypothesis in his book on the Dancing Plague, A Time to Dance, A Time to Die. He says, yes, ergot can cause convulsions and hallucinations, but it also restricts blood flow to the extremities. Someone poisoned by it simply could not dance for several days in a row. Just, it would be impossible. So the most widely accepted theory of what was happening to these people also comes from John Waller, and he had laid out several papers for his reasons for believing the dancing plague was a form of mass psychogenic disorder. Such outbreaks take place under circumstances of extreme stress and generally take form based on local fears. In the case of the dancing plague of 1518, Waller cites a series of famines and the presence of disease such as smallpox and syphilis as overwhelming stressors affecting residents of Strasbourg. Combined with St. Vitus, a Catholic saint who 16th century Europeans believed had the power to curse people with a dancing plague, when combined with the horrors of disease and famine, the St. Vitus superstition may have triggered a stress-induced hysteria that took hold of much of the city. So that's what they think most likely happened. It was just mass hysteria.
And they all had smallpox and syphilis.
And we're starving, and we're poor.
So when they realized that Fra Trofea got to go on vacation, and she had to get fed, she got new shoes, and she got rubbed with oil, everybody was like, yeah.
Yeah, get a massage.
Let's get down on this.
It's nice.
Okay.
I didn't think about that. That's probably exactly what happened.
I mean, she's cured when she came back.
Yeah.
She's like, oh man, I feel great. I can totally start doing some cleaning and shit around here.
Yeah, we can't do this again because they might actually burn us as witches.
Right. We can only do this once, ladies.
Yeah. Also wanted to mention the Pied Piper of Hamelin, the legend, you know.
Okay.
The legend dates back to the Middle Ages. The earliest reference describing a piper dressed in multicolored or pied clothing, who was a rat catcher hired by the town to lure rats away with his magic pipe. When the citizens refuse to pay for the service as promised, he retaliates by using his instrument's magical powers on their children, leading them away as he did the rats. And this legend of the Pied Piper originated in the 13th century, and it was around the same time as the traveling and dancing children of Germany in 1237. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if that's got anything to do with it, but I thought that was interesting.
Instead of just saying, like, we got some weird-ass little kids, they're like, some guy was, like, luring them away with music.
Yeah.
That's better. Well, that was really good. I didn't know that much about it. I never thought about the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Oh, so my source is publicdomainreview.org, The Dancing Plague of 1518, interestingengineering.com, The Dancing Plague Has Got to Be the Weirdest Outbreak Ever Experienced, and then ancient.eu, St. Anthony's Fire. There's a couple other ones. We'll link those in the show notes.
All right. Great job, bud.
Thanks.
So, okay. My story is about the Ginganer and the Draugr. I'll start with my sources. Ginganer from the Mask of Reason website, Pariah Paranormal Facebook page, Zombies in Folklore from Fandom, Draugr, the World of Myths and Folklore from Fandom, Ginganer from Astonishing Legends. There's an article from that. Ginganer Wikipedia and the Draugr Wikipedia. hailing as far back as the Viking Age and existing in Norwegian, Danish, Swedish, and Scandinavian folklore, the Ginganer is said to be the hybrid of a ghost and a zombie. Unlike ghosts, they cannot walk through walls, and unlike zombies, they do not eat brains or the flesh of the living. Basically, it's a walking dead body with human memories. And it'd be like me dying and coming back, and I still have my memories in my mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and Ginganer even translates to walking after death or walking again. Usually coming back because of unfinished business or dying in a violent manner, the Ginganer are created in one of the following ways. One, either a person commits suicide. Two, when a person is murdered. Or three, when a person is the murderer. So depending on the era and the folklore, the intention of the Ginganer can vary from needing help from a living person so they can rest in peace, haunting the living, or spreading disease. A dead person being back is never good, and no, they're not back to be your best friend, Mike.
Oh.
Whatever you think the reason is, it is always going to be malevolent.
Whoa, what?
Right? Malevolent in nature.
Malevolent.
Given the circumstances that surround how the Ginganer are created, they're considered by the majority to be like lost souls. Since they were removed from life too early, they are extremely vicious with one mission, to disrupt the lives of the living. This includes the people that they know and love, like friends, family, but especially the person or persons that may have caused their death. So if they were murdered, that's what they're coming back for.
Revenge.
Yeah, they're just revenge-oriented. They have unfinished business. So that sounds very ghostly. That's usually, at least in Western lore, that's why a ghost doesn't leave. Still maintaining its human mind and memories and appearing completely human, the Ginganer will stalk their prey like animals. Although, they can do this during the daytime, they prefer and are more comfortable doing this at night under the cover of darkness. Once they are ready to strike, they will wait for their victim to fall asleep, and they will pinch them and flee.
So they just came back to pinch people?
Yeah. I expected something a little more epic, but
they just kick them in the dick and then run off.
So once the victim wakes up, without knowing where it came from, they will have a blue mark where they were pinched. This is where things get a little more wicked. So the site of the pinch will become infected, and the infection will work its way through the body until it reaches the victim's heart and it kills them. All the while, the flesh at the site will begin to decay and rot, and it will basically start falling off in nasty infested chunks. Like, it'll just start sloughing away. And it doesn't take that long for stuff like that usually to happen. So I don't know. I couldn't find if it's like a slow death or if it was fast, like it just happened in a few hours. Either way, ew.
Yeah. It sounds like a zombie bite.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Except you're getting pinched.
Right.
So what happens if you come in contact with one of these nasty creatures and it's not intentionally out to harm you? Well, apparently, if you do come in contact with one of these nasty little fuckers, it just brushes up against you as it's walking by, or you do that. I don't know why you would. Because, you know, you think it's just a human. Wherever it touched you, you will get an infection and you will also die once it spreads to your heart, and your skin will also fall off where it touched you.
So it doesn't have to pinch you. It just has to touch you? Huh.
Maybe it's quicker if it pinches you. Anyways.
So how do you kill it or stop it?
So most of the legends focus more on preventing a Ginganer from occurring instead of getting rid of one that's already active. However, one of the original Viking legends does state that they can be killed by an ordinary man. And once killed, like, the ghost kind of leaves the body, or the spirit in a sense. However, if a person wants to make sure that a loved one does not turn into one of these nasty-ass creatures, they would basically put holy items like crosses on their body to prevent them from pinching their victims. It would kind of like serve as a weight, like it weighed them down. They couldn't move around and stuff due to the holy relics on them. They would paint symbols or runes on the inside of the deceased person's coffin to make sure they would not wake up. Or if they did wake up, they wouldn't be able to get out of the coffin and walk around. And due to the extreme fear that occurred so long ago, so like this was legit. This was a legit fear that people actually had, was that these people would come back from the dead. If it was thought that a person was going to come back, the tradition was to carry the dead person's coffin three times around the church, and then they would lift the coffin over the church's wall instead of carrying it through the gate. And any items used to bury the dead would need to stay at the grave. Like, you could never touch them again, I guess. Apparently, it confused them. But in my opinion, if you're coming back with your mind and your memories, you're going to walk the fuck out of there and it's not going to be an issue, right?
You could just burn them.
Yeah. But it's not common for people, I guess, to do that in this time. So, and also, a VARP, which was a pile of stones or twigs, also had to be built where the person died. So each time you pass the location, You were supposed to throw another stone or twig on the pile for good luck, and if you didn't, you would possibly suffer a dangerous accident. In the more modern version of this legend, these beings are more like ghost related, they're less violent, and they're often just correlated to hauntings. So this, as time has passed, that's kind of what they're referred to. I did see where some people have lightly compared this creature to another undead Scandinavian legend called the Draugr. These are definitely two totally different creatures. However, the Draugr can be created from any person, but especially if the person was mean, nasty, or greedy in their life. If a person died while in a sitting position or standing, it was an indication that they would return from the dead. In order to prevent this from occurring, the deceased would need to be put into a horizontal position by breaking their posture. When breaking the potential Draugr's posture, the living had to be extremely careful to stay out of sight of the deceased person's gaze. And by not doing so, they could suffer from the evil eye.
Oh, not the evil eye.
Which can occur with or without a person's knowledge, and some believe that it will cause misfortune or injury to the victim, especially if you're like an innocent person. It's going to affect you more. So stay out of a dead man's gaze so you don't get that evil eye.
Yeah.
A Draugr's main motivation for returning is usually greed or jealousy in relation to like physical things like treasure, or they have an undeniable longing for things that they once had in life. And that still is usually their treasures, in a sense. All their gold, all their valuables. A lot of times, wealthy men would be buried with their gold and items of value. And if someone were to disturb their resting place or even try to rob them, they would come back as a Draugr. These specific instances, they stayed like with their gravesite or with their burial mound. They didn't like travel out. But if you were there, they were going to eat you. When they do return from the dead, they do attack and they eat the living, leaving more of their kind behind in the process. So they are described as extremely hideous and can be either death blue, corpse pale, or black as death. Those were the exact descriptions. And swollen or grossly bloated, possessing long scratching claws. It's also believed that some can rise from their graves in a wisp of smoke, and they have superhuman strength, and they smell like super, super bad. Like, it's an undeniable stench of decay that's apparently extremely overwhelming. One legend does reference two underlings dying outside of a burial mound just from the smell that a Draugr was emitting, which is kind of odd that you would die from a smell.
Must be pretty stout.
That's something. They can increase their physical size substantially, which allows them to step on and crush the living. Some can shapeshift, and when they do, it's said that they either turn into a flayed bull, a gray horse that has a broken back and no ears and no tail, or a cat that will sit on the chest of a sleeping person, becoming increasingly heavier until the person suffocates.
I hate when the cat lays on me and I'm trying to sleep. He's trying to kill me.
He doesn't lay on your chest.
I'm going to get him.
Leave him alone. So other magical abilities that these creatures possess is they can enter a person's dream and even leave behind a tangible object as proof and the reason why they were there. They can curse the living, even killing some people with bad luck. They can turn day into night and even bring disease to entire villages. Unlike the Djinganer, the Draugr has an insatiable appetite. So, you know, the Djinganer comes back because it's got unfinished business. Is there, you can't say right or wrong, but it's coming back because it's pissed and it's out to get you. But the Draugr is usually related to jealousy and greed, but they're also hungry as shit. So they're not just limited to eating just human flesh, but they've been known to decimate herds of livestock by pursuing them and running them to death, and then they'll eat them. And this includes killing the unfortunate person watching over the animals.
That's how early humans hunted.
What do you mean?
We have stamina, and we would just continue to follow the animal and scare it to death, basically.
Really?
Yeah, because after it would lay down, there we are again. And right. Get up and run and run.
So it didn't get to rest.
And never got to rest. And it would just die.
Huh. That's terrible.
It's terrifying for the animal.
So most Draugr are immune to any type of weapon, with the exception of iron, being able to injure it but not kill it. In order to get rid of a Draugr, one of two things does have to occur. So one, someone has to cut off their head, burn them to ash, and throw them in the ocean. Or two, they have to literally be wrestled back into their grave.
I believe you can, three, use dragon glass to kill them. The White Walkers?
That's not real. That's from a show.
This isn't real.
Also, an ordinary person cannot do any of these things. So the legend states that the only person that can actually kill these creatures has to be a person of great moral fiber and courage. So basically, a hero.
So Roy Benavidez.
Right? But he's passed. So if they come back, we
Man,
if
him. He comes back as a Draugr, we are screwed.
We're fucked, yeah. So you can prevent a Draugr from occurring. Some of the methods used, they would tie their big toes together so they couldn't walk. They would drive needles through the soles of the person's feet so that they couldn't walk.
You could just tie their shoelaces together.
Did they have shoelaces?
I mean, these days. Okay. Just tie their sneakers together.
I don't even know that they actually put shoes or pants on them.
What?
There's no point. Technically, they're not coming back. So why would you even put that on them?
They bury bodies in suits and stuff. What are you talking about?
It's usually just the top.
I want to, even if I'm cremated, I want to be fully clothed when I go in the furnace.
We'll discuss this further. Okay.
Or planted whole. I don't care. Just want to be clothed.
You're not going to care. I assure you. If you come back because you're pissed off because you ain't got pants on,
yeah,
that's going to be the dumbest reason to come back.
That's why I'm coming back. Looking for my pants.
Start pinching people because you ain't no damn pants.
Pinch that booty.
Stop. So, also, the coffin had to be lifted and lowered in three different directions while being carried out of the house. This was supposed to confuse the dead person and cause them to lose their sense of direction. So, that's another difference between the Draugr and the Djinganer is the Draugr doesn't have their memories or their mind. So, it should be very easy to confuse them.
Yeah, they're stupid.
I don't know that they're stupid. They're killing the shit out of people. Also carrying the deceased person through a corpse door. Believing that the dead could only enter the same way that they left, they would carry the deceased feet first through this door and there would be people surrounding it so that the dead wouldn't have a clue where they were. Then the door would be bricked up, so if they returned, they wouldn't be able to get back in because their passage of entry had been blocked because they bricked it up.
That's a lot of extra work.
I know, or they could burn them. Obviously, but they didn't do that all the time back then. It wasn't so easy.
They could blindfold them.
But in reality, both of these creatures seem to have the similarities of disease spreading, which would be in correlation with the times and explaining like why a whole village got sick or an entire family died or even herds of animals, you know, were being killed by other animals or even humans. You know, it didn't take much to spook people back then. Yeah. I did find it interesting how the concept of the zombie in general is not new. So originally, for most of us, the zombie appeared in the first Night of the Living Dead movie by George Romero back in the late 60s. However, it is not the first zombie movie. And I just never looked it up, you know, because I've never thought about it. I like zombie stuff, but I'm not a super huge buff that I've seen everything. One of the ones that's considered the first zombie movie is from 1932, and it's called White Zombie.
And is that where Rob Zombie got the name for the band, White Zombie?
I don't know, but that would make a lot of sense. You can actually watch it, I think, on YouTube, the way it looked like you could watch it on there. It's a little over an hour. That's probably with 75 commercials in there, or ads. But it could be.
And the first movie that referenced brain-eating zombies was Return of the Living Dead. That's where the old brain-eating came from.
When was that one?
The Return of the Living Dead was August 16th, 1985. And it's super, like, it's a super campy movie. But it's the first one where the zombies are like brains.
So that is the folklore of the Djinganer and the Draugr, the early versions of zombies, or the zombie ghost hybrid. Like, why is there not a movie about that shit? I looked and I didn't see one. There's no movie about a hybrid ghost zombie. I'm interested to see a pinching
spectral zombie.
Yeah.
Well, good job.
Thank you. Don't forget to like us, rate us, review us, Apple Podcast or Podchaser. You can also contact us via social media, Facebook, Instagram. You can email us at eerieandabsurd@gmail.com. You can just call us if you have story references or you want to yell at us. That's perfectly fine. Don't forget to tell your friends, your
call
family.
Us.
Did I say call?
Yeah.
Email us. Damn it. Maybe you do this.
No, you do. You're doing great.
Am I?
Yeah.
Well, email us. Let us know what's up. We'd love to hear from you. So until next time.
You can dance if you want to. You can leave your friends behind.
Because if your friends don't dance, then they're no friends of mine.
That's right. I made that up. That's not a song.
Okay, bye.
Until next time, fellow Absurdians, remember, everything you've heard is true. Monsters are real. And the strangers in black are not a figment of your imagination. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or your favorite podcast streaming service. Do you have a story you want to share? Contact us at eerieandabsurd@gmail.com or visit our website at eerieandabsurd.com to submit a suggestion. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram, both at eerie_absurd.